I really sleep good here. It's really quiet. It's really nice. And he looked at me. He said, well, Rick, you know, it's not that nice. You know, you do have your own problems, too. Then you see that thing with that girl back in May. That sure, that maybe it's too easy. Maybe it's too placid. And, you know, maybe it works on themselves. I really don't know.
So where does this leave us?
Lori Dan, that's her name. I forgot her name. Lori Dan, yeah. The girl in Winnetka.
Lori Dan, yeah.
You know, sad, but...
She flipped, yeah.
Yeah, it was very sad. Those senseless things I don't understand. I really hate it when, you know, people are shot down for no apparent reason. And, you know, like the thing with the girl in the cash station. But you always have to be, you know, I'm sure you always, well, I've seen you walk around. You look around when you walk.
Now, what do you do when you come home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then what do you do?
I turn on the TV. Oh, I've been reading books, turn on the TV. Sometimes I go out, go to the neighborhood park. You know, just the usual kind of things. At times, though, I do go out of the neighborhood to find, you know, activities. But it's a very, very comfortable neighborhood, very comfortable house, you know. It's, I don't know, now I hear my parents want to move again. The move is on. They've been moving for the last 16 years. They haven't moved yet.
But they're staying there.
Well, I talked to my mom about a month ago, and I said, you know, a move at this time in your life would maybe shorten your life, and you won't find anything as comfortable as you are now. Just, you know, let me provide for you. But then...
Right out the bat, I'm talking to someone I've known for years. As you know, he's in for Andre's purpose and Kathy's and the others who are transcribing. Quinn Brisbane was, of course, set off the Great Divide. Now, Quinn, start again. When last we talked, as they say in soap operas, when last we talked, you were teaching, have many years. Where is this now? It's a school in the south side of Chicago.
Right, Harlan High School, 9652 South Michigan Avenue.
Mostly black.
Yeah. In fact, I think all the students got at least some black now.
I haven't had a white student in about
15 years now.
What's that?
I haven't had a white student in about 15 years
already.
Now.
Already?
Mm-hmm.
And you've lived there yourself in the community.
Yes, I've lived in the community really about ever since I've been teaching down there. I've lived in the community for 23 years in London townhouses.
Are you known? The community is almost all black.
Yeah.
Are you the only, you and your wife and children the only whites?
Well, I think there are four or five mixed couples. I mean, at least I see white people walking in and out of there every day. No, I think they moved. They retired
down
to Florida, but we're the only all-white couple left, I think.
So the obvious question, you've been there 25 years.
Yeah.
So is there, since this book is about race today, has there been a change one way or the other as far as your living there and attitudes and changes you've observed?
Well, there have been a number of things. One of the things, a lot of the people who lived there with us have been able to get bank-financed mortgages, have been able to move to some suburbs where they hadn't been able to live before. And so we've seen a little bit of a social class change there, but it's good, comfortable housing. So a lot of people have stayed, and it's an overwhelmingly stable neighborhood. Most of the people who are our neighbors have been our neighbors for at least 15, 20 years.
Oh, it's working class then? Is most of them work?
Yeah. Yeah, it's working class. Don't know if you know of a law that I think was the one thing Robert Weaver got through when he was Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. But they had the problem, where do you put people who are just over income for public housing? So this was set up that you could set up cooperative housing developments for people who were over the minimum income for public housing, but yet not able to, you know, make a big down payment for themselves. And this was set up as a co-op. And the only advantage we get was that we got what was the going Veterans Administration mortgage rate at that time instead of the FHA rate. And so we are 803 families in a co-op on the same 40-year mortgage, of which we've paid out 23 now.
So since we're talking about changes, and you also school,
yeah.
Last time you talked about school, too. You teach changes you've seen. You were implying last time that a lot of the stable people have stably income people, one way or another, have left, and what we're left
yes.
with are, I don't use that word underclass, that's a word that's been used, you know, by William Julius Wilson, you know,
mm-hmm.
the sociologist you see. He spoke of class, you spoke of class too.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that this is a matter of income, it's a matter of lifestyles. To a great extent, it's also a matter of luck. I mean, you get two or three hard knocks and you're down there for a few years. It is not particularly a matter of how much melanin you've got in your skin. And what we've seen there is a decline in what I would call pure racism. But yet a kind of a hardening of class lines. And now you've got a bunch of black people who've made it and who are out of there, and like other people in similar circumstances throughout history, are not looking back any more than they've absolutely got to. And a lot of people who are into a situation where they feel trapped, where they're not going to get out, where they can't see much for themselves or much for the children.
And so that's where class matter comes into being.
Yeah. It's not entirely a matter of money. They're in the co-op, where we are a very stable group. We've got a lot of cops. We've got a lot of postal workers. We've got a lot of people who work for the CTA. And they don't make much money, but they make it pretty steadily, and they can plan ahead, and most of them have medical insurance, so they can't be knocked down into the garbage heap that way. And it isn't much money, and they're doing all right. Give you an example. I knew this kid who was going to be a pimp. He was a neighbor, too. He was a burglar there when...
How old a kid was that?
Well, he's a little older than my son, so he must be 30.
Yeah.
Or close now.
When did he want to be a pimp, though? I mean,
when he was in his teens.
That's what I mean.
And he'd always have these wonderful sharp suits, you know, and you'd see him, and he was always extremely well-dressed, and he always had a big roll of bills. But one time I saw him, and somebody had busted a couple of his front teeth, and they just looked awful. And he really needed a lot of expensive dental work. Well, it's no good pulling out a roll of bills when you go to a dentist. You got to be the kind of person who can commit yourself to some fair-sized payments over a period of time. Your income can't go up and down. He had those beautiful suits, and he couldn't get his teeth fixed. And I told him, Alan, you're going to have to give up this kind of life if you want those teeth fixed. If you ever want a house, you got to give up this kind of life. If you ever want to settle down with a family, you got to give up this kind of life. And I saw him a couple of years later, and he smiled, and his teeth were fixed, and he was carrying a brown bag and waiting for the bus at 100th and Cottage Grove.
Yeah, but I don't understand that. Why couldn't he get his teeth fixed if he has the cash to pay the dentist?
Well, to get your teeth fixed doesn't take $100, $150. To get your teeth fixed right, takes $2,000 or $3,000. And he had a lot of money in hand, but $2,000 or $3,000 was a little beyond his capabilities at any given time. And he was absolutely unable to say he was going to have big money next week. He had to have a steady income if he was going to get his teeth fixed.
Well, so we come to wanted to be a pimp. It said rather casually, like, I'm going to be a doctor, a lawyer, to be a pimp.
Yeah.
Is that so in
the... Well, it's so... Actually, he's rather rare in our particular neighborhood, but he's not a rare type at the school I teach in. We've had a lot of kids like that. I remember one of them, he used to pull out a roll of bills every other Friday. I had him for a late afternoon class, and I'd go down and get my paycheck and come back up and teach my last class. He'd always offer to cash it for me.
Hmm. How old was he?
Oh, he was 17, 18. He got busted the next year. He ran into a cop who didn't like him around the neighborhood, and the cop hired a kid with a baseball bat. And he had this magnificent car, and he drove it fast, and the kid with the baseball bat smashed his taillight. Mm-hmm. And the cop stopped him at the next corner for not having his taillight. Mm-hmm. And did you ever know the Panchico brothers, any of them?
Oh, well, they were famous, shall we say, noted for their aptitude as criminals.
Yeah, well, this cop had studied under one of the Panchico brothers, and do you remember the one...
White cop?
No, this was a black cop.
Black cop. Mm-hmm.
But he's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stopped the car for not having a taillight.
Mm-hmm.
And he was back there looking at the broken taillight. And there was one of the Panchico brothers. I remember my brother told me he gave a demonstration of this down at the county criminal courts, 26th and Cal. The cop hit the trunk of the car,
mm-hmm.
and it flew open. And his stash was back there, the pills he was selling.
Pills?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the cop had a legitimate bust because of the taillight being out.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy went to... Let's see, Pontiac or Statesville, I forget where they put him now, but he didn't last very long.
What do you mean he didn't last very long?
Well, I mean he didn't last very long as a big-time operator selling pills.
But he was in your class.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a very good student, as a matter of fact.
And a good student.
Yeah.
Now we come to something. You said the neighborhood is rather stable.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time we spoke, the previous great divide, you said there's an instability in the school.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Well, what I was saying last time used to be that our kids couldn't get into a lot of schools either on the south side or other parts of town. But now you pass an entrance exam, you can read eighth grade level, you can get into Chicago Vocational School.
High school.
Yeah. Then you can pass another exam. You can get into Lindblom High School where the standards are a little higher. There are other schools. There's Whitney Young, which is a magnet school for all over the city. And you can do that. There's the one my son went to, Metro, Chicago High School for Metropolitan Studies.